Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with a Chicken Whisperer radio show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Monday, September 23rd, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensey.com. Brensey spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensey.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensey. Technology you can trust.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on this great Monday episode of Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Today's guest, of course, will be Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State VetSupply.com. And today's show is going to be all about salmonella. We've had shows in the past. Heck, we've been doing this show. This is our fifth year of broadcasting, 864 episodes. We have really beaten the dead horse when it comes to salmonella, but it hasn't been in the news recently, so we thought we would go ahead and get Peter's take on it, talking about some of the different types of salmonella, treatments and symptoms and things like that, and how just because you've got backyard chickens, which what you claim to be a clean coop and run, does not mean you can ignore the risks of salmonella. It just doesn't. Now, there are a lot of myths and misunderstandings out there about salmonella. When we talk about salmonella and post it, most folks just think about, oh, well, you know, I'll just wash the eggs really good, and then everything will be fine, just in case my chickens may have salmonella in their poopy. Because we talk about that kind of salmonella where the children a lot of times each year around Easter time and really throughout the year, they'll play with the baby chicks and then put their hands in their mouth and get a case of the salmonella, and they end up being very ill, miss them, going to the hospital. And so people just think about, oh, we'll just wash your hands real good and everything will be fine. But often the times when we're thinking about that type of salmonella, we forget about the salmonella that's already inside the chicken, inside the egg, rather. And so that's why it's that much more important as well to cook your food well and cook those eggs. I believe it's 160 degrees because we had posted a salmonella article on our Facebook page earlier in the year, and somebody had said something about, well, I'm glad I don't have to worry about that because I have Marans, whatever you want to call them. And I was like, what do you mean? And they're like, oh, because their eggshells are so thick, there's no salmonella inside. And so, of course, having the ability to contact experts around the country, my first call was to poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McCray, PhD, and up there at a Delaware State University poultry program. And I was talking to her about it, and I was like, what, have you ever heard of this? And it ended up kind of being one of those myths, rumors, and misunderstandings on blogs and forums that somehow people end up trusting. And so it's just one of those things that has nothing to do with the salmonella that may be contained in the yolk, and then which the egg, the shell is formed around the oak and the yolk, and then of course pops out the vent. So they have a thick shell. You went, okay, so that's keeping the salmonella inside. So it's just one of those things. And so there's a lot of bad information out there about salmonella, and we thought that time since there's been a lot of information on the news about it recently and lots of posts. And whenever I post about salmonella, people easily post about it, and a lot of people are correct. You know, wash your hands, be smart whenever you handle anything, whether it be lizards or turtles or poultry or dogs or cats or clean out the litter box or whatever. But you forget about the salmonella inside the egg, not necessarily the salmonella that's contained in the poopy that's on the outside of the egg. So we talk about it. We have the CDC on talking about this, the FDA on talking about this, the USDA talking about this. So today is the chicken doctor's turn, and we're going to be talking about salmonella today. Hope you all had a wonderful, wonderful weekend. I know that we sure did. We actually went to, even though we chickens and goats and things around the homestead, there is a petting zoo right probably about 10 miles away from here. So yesterday afternoon after church and lunch, we took Caleb over to a petting zoo, and he had just a blast. We posted pictures on our Facebook page over there of that. Had a really good time, and he had a blast. That's all that matters. And gotta love it. Goats are just as precious and cute as always, except for their evil-looking eyes. But nonetheless, gotta love the goats. And guys, he loves turtles. He saw turtles that were there, the llamas, There were zebras, and camels, and all kinds of cool stuff. So alligators, crocodiles, horses. We went on the pony rides. So we had a great weekend regarding that. I don't think we did any fishing this weekend, which is probably the first weekend in 6 weeks that we haven't gone fishing. But you know what? I take that back. We did go fishing. Our secret spot, I guess, is no secret anymore, but it was taken. So we went to another spot, and he kind of played in the sand on the lake beach while I tossed a few worms out into the water and not a single bite. So maybe 30 minutes of fishing this weekend, but love to spend the time with the family. And I hope you, too, had a wonderful, wonderful weekend with family this weekend. For those of you who are wondering, we are currently right now actively working on the next Chicken Whisperer tour, which will also be a book tour as well. And it looks like it's going to be through Tennessee right now, or maybe first of the year, come early part of the year when Chick Days starts to get started in February. We may make that trip out towards Texas and hit some Alabama, Mississippi, maybe Louisiana, but specifically Texas. And but it looks like maybe for the first week of November, Chicken Whisperer Tour will end up being in Tennessee. I know that there's three cities that have recently and are currently approving backyard poultry. Knoxville is one of them. Chattanooga is another. And, of course, Nashville, 2 years, maybe coming up on 3 years ago, allowed backyard poultry there in the city of Nashville. So we're looking at hitting probably those three cities and then two in between, maybe one in between Chattanooga and Nashville. And then maybe one between Knoxville and Nashville. And that kind of creates a triangle between Chattanooga, Knoxville, and Nashville. And we'll hit those three, plus maybe one in between each one of those. So that's what we're looking for. I sent a schedule over and some dates over to Tractor Supply this morning. And we're trying to tweak that a little bit to hit the big major stores where they sell a lot of chicken stuff and a lot of chicks for Chick Days. To make it a very good tour. I know it'll be big there in Nashville and Chattanooga, Knoxville, with the recent approval of backyard chickens. So we're looking forward to that tour. That'll be coming up here in November. And that's when really things start getting kicked off with Chick Days with a lot of these companies and the hatcheries and things. November is a big month when it comes to getting ready for Chick Days, whether it be Ideal Poultry or Mount Healthy or McMurray Hatchery and all of them. They really start getting ready. And if you're looking to get any kind of rare breed chickens from the major mail order hatcheries, you need to go ahead and order those in November and get your order in. It is not a advertising ploy. It is not a PR move to try to get you to order early. About 7 years ago, 8 years ago, when the backyard poultry movement was, just one of the most explosive years it's ever had. I know, for example, Ideal Poultry, largest provider of backyard poultry in the country, 6 million chicks shipped every year. They sent out information to all of their customers saying, hey, you need to order now because of this big movement. And people thought it was an advertising ploy or a PR move or what have you. But when they went to order a few weeks before Easter, like they always do, Ideal was like, sorry, you know, we tried to tell you, we're 6, 8, 12 weeks behind on even the most common breeds, Rhode Island Reds, Barred Rocks, Overlaced Wyandottes, Buff Orpington. So if you want any type of anything, maybe even considered rare, late fall is the time to order it, and then even your common breeds to come January. But Chick Days starts rolling around in February. Tractor Supply starts shipping out chicks to their warmer clients about the second week, 10th to the 14th of February, and that's when we'll probably start having another Chicken Whisperer tour there in February, just like we did last year. And so definitely, if you're looking at getting any rare breeds from the major hatcheries across the country, you need to start looking at ordering now. But hopefully, if you're in the Tennessee area, hey, maybe we'll see you this coming up. But we're looking at the first week in November as our tour, and we'll be doing book signings, two-hour workshops at every store that we stop at, and, of course, pictures, autographs, and all that great stuff. So it's going to be a fun time, and we're definitely looking forward to that come November. And so looking forward to it. Just a shout out to everybody listening today. Of course, all of our homeschool students that incorporate the show daily with their homeschool curriculum. We thank you very much for tuning in. I know there's a lot of you out there that homeschool and listen to the show. All the over-the-road truck drivers we hear from, keep the rubber on the road, get that freight there safely. But we thank you for listening to the archives 24/7. You might be listening at 3 a.m. right now, Mr. Professional Truck Driver. We thank you for doing so. All of the feed and seed stores across this great land that stream this radio show live every day for their customers, we thank you very much for doing so. We hope business is doing well. and you're selling lots of goodies. And, of course, our live listeners and our archive listeners, there's thousands of you who listen to the archive, and we appreciate you doing so. And everybody in the chat room today, and, in fact, guests who are listening right now, all of you who are in the chat room as a guest, if you'll just take a moment, you can register with Blog Talk Radio, either using your Facebook account or your Twitter account, or just create a new one in Blog Talk Radio, get your little screen name there. Come on in. You can participate in the chat room, and you can even do that daily. So when we have topics that you're interested in, and you come in, you can ask questions live in the chat room right for our guest. We'll try to get those answered on the air, like we often do with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. So we hope that you'll have a chance to do that. It just takes a second, and you can register with Blog Talk Radio, and then you'll be able to post and chat and meet some new friends in the chat room. Lots of great friends and relationships have been made in the Chicken chat room over the last 5 years. We've been doing the broadcast, 864 episodes. So, and you can listen to the archive on blogtalkradio.com, iTunes.com, Zoom.com, podcast.com, and they're all free. Thanks to our sponsors for your listening pleasure. So gotta love it. Yeah, Christmas Chick in the chat room. We're still looking at coming down to Florida, spending some good top part of the winter down in Florida, and we're still talking to a few of the RV resorts to see which ones are going to meet our needs perfectly. But if not, we either on the way down or sometime, we may be able to stop by your farm, Fort Christmas Farm there, and stay a few days and visit with you. Always like to see the fans when we're out on the road. In fact, Becca Boo, I know, listens to the show quite frequently. And when we were doing our tour in Florida, she had to stop by, and we had a cookout and hung out with her chicks in her backyard, and we had a great time. They fed us on en route in between two events, so it's really cool to visit with her. So we like to see fans along the way. And we were in Raleigh. There was a lady that was really upset. She wasn't going to be able to make the event. She had to work. And so we were there, I think, a day early. And so lo and behold, I surprised her at work. We stopped by and autographed the book that she had. So it was really fun. Love to see our fans out there when we are on the road. So we are just actively waiting for Peter Brown to give us a call in today. And today's topic is going to be all about salmonella with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply. And if you missed last week's episodes, we had some good ones also with poultry scientist and professor, Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD. She came on Thursday, and she had several new research studies that she was kind of dissecting for us and telling us about it. Some of it was very, very interesting. Again, you can listen to all those archives. Let's see what we've got going on this week. Of course, we've got Peter Brown. This coming Wednesday, it's another one of our hot shows, All About Quail with the Quail Lady. She's coming on twice a month now. Alexander Douglas, you got to love that. That'll be this Wednesday. This coming Thursday, we've got Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, is going to be here talking about making mead, honey wine, I think, is the slang for that, but making mead on Thursday. Again, Wednesday, All About Quail with the Quail Lady. And I think tomorrow being the fourth Tuesday, I think it is open for tomorrow. So we'll see if we can't scrounger up a guest for tomorrow's show. So you can tune in here every day, Monday through Friday, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You may have heard a new commercial on our new sponsor commercial during our radio shows, and that is the Sweeter Heater, sweeterheater.com. And many of our longtime listeners and our longtime fans absolutely know my theory, my opinion when it comes to heaters in winter. And it's starting to get cool in a lot of spots. Fall is upon us. The last day of summer was a couple of days ago, the first day of fall. And so it's getting a little bit cooler here in the evenings and whatnot. Now's about the time I'll start getting questions from folks. How cold is too cold? Do I need to add a heater in the coop? It's going to get down to 33. What do I need to do? And every year, as long as I've been doing this, decade, as far as the as promoting backyard poultry, I guess, and doing it professionally for about 5 years as my full-time job, my answer every year is always the same, okay? In most all cases, anywhere in America, heat is not needed, okay? Chickens have been around, and they have been domesticated for approximately 6,000 years. We have only had electricity in America for the last, 125 years or so? Chickens have been doing just fine, even for the 5,000 825 years, we have not had electricity in America. Okay, they're doing fine. So I preach that every year. Every single year we talk about the coop fires that occur because of dangerous heat lamps in the coops. Every year, I mean, when we're talking about posting 20, 30, even some years 40, these are just the ones that we learn about through the news or through other people or posts or newspaper articles, where coops have burned to the ground. Every chicken is now dead. And in some cases, yes, you can go back and look at our Facebook post. In some cases, the neighbor's house catches on fire because of the neighbor's chicken coop with a heater that in most all cases is not necessary. Dangerous heat lamp. Okay, so we go through that. We also kind of reiterate on that where, you know, hey, when it's 20 below zero and you're eating breakfast in the morning, what do you see outside? You see little birds flying around looking for food and water. And I assure you, there is not a heat lamp in that nest up in that tree. And those little birds are doing just fine. The birds have feathers. Okay, keeps them warm. So, again, you do not need a heater in your coop in most all cases in all of North America. Okay. Even up in Canada, Alaska, we talk about folks and they post on our Facebook page, you got down to -43 here in Anchorage, and guess what? No heater in the coop. Okay. You want your coop to be good. You want it to be well insulated, but you want it to be free from drafts, but good ventilation. You don't want to wrap it in plastic because then moisture can build up. It increases the chance of frostbite with that moisture in there because it can't breathe. So no drafts when they're sitting and roosting on the roost. You don't want wind blowing their feathers. If you see that, you know, you need to change some things, but you do want good ventilation. But that's my point. And we say this on our tour every single year on the show. I do not and will not argue with somebody who comes up to me and says, Andy, but I'll sleep better at night knowing my chickens are toasty and warm. You can't argue with that mentality, so I'm not going to. That is your choice. You know the facts. You know that it's not needed, but you're still going to heat your coop. That's fine. I know for a fact that we will never, because they're $10, we will never talk people out of using dangerous heat lamps. Why? Because they're $10. I get it. Okay. So we tell folks, if you are one of the few that choose to heat your coop unnecessarily in the winter, okay, for whatever reason, then we ask, and if you do use a heat lamp because they're $10, to secure it with four different fail safes. For example, if you're going to clamp that dangerous heat lamp with a heat bulb in it to the rafter of your coop, then you're going to clamp it, then you're going to duct tape it, then you're going to get a spring-loaded clamp or some type of screw clamp and clamp it, and then you're also going to chain it to something. So if that lamp is going to fail and fall, not only does the clamp on the lamp have to fail, the duct tape has to fail, the screw or spring clamp has to fail, and then when it falls, the chain has to break it all at the same time for that to land in the shavings, catch your coop on fire, which will then catch your neighbor's house on fire. And all your chickens are dead. You killed them by loving them too much. Okay? So at least if you're going to use that dangerous $10 heat lamp, secure it like four different ways so you don't end up being that statistic where, you know, hey, heat lamp fell. All my chickens are dead. Neighbor's house caught on fire. I have my garage burnt to the ground. Both cars destroyed. Yep, you can go back and look at all the archived stories where we've talked about that. House burnt completely to the ground. Nothing left. No memories. No pictures of Granny. No nothing. Because they had a unnecessary heat lamp. Now, I will tell you this. One of our new sponsors, the Sweeter Heater, okay, if you choose to do that, it does not heat the coop. It provides a heat source by heating and providing warmth for your chickens. You can hang it behind your roost, above your roost. It's completely sealed. It's sanitized, you know, you can disinfect it, and it is safe. Falls in the shavings, you're going to be okay. You can put your hand on it and leave it there. It is provides warmth, but is not at a dangerous heat there. So you want to keep that in mind. But the problem there is, again, for some people, it's about $90. Anywhere from $70 to $110. But think about what you have invested in your chickens, all the feed, all the time, the health of your chickens, what you have involved with your coop, and things like that. The safety of not having your neighbor's house catch on fire because you have an unnecessary heat lamp or a dangerous heat lamp. So think about that. The Sweeter Heater, sweeterheater.com, new sponsor. We've had them on the show every single year in the late fall talking about their product. And, again, it doesn't heat your coop up to 65 degrees, but it does provide a heat source, a radiant heat source for your chickens on the roost. Not behind the roost, hanging above the roost, if you must and feel like you have to do that, if you will sleep better at night, knowing Princess and Petunia are safe and toasty. Safe is the key word there. so a SpeakerHeater.com. But keep that in mind as we're starting to enter the winter season. I've posted nothing about winter season yet on our Facebook, but we will soon, as we'll start getting questions about, oh, it's going to get down to 35, I need to do this, I need to do that, especially when we're talking about dangerous heat lamps and the amount of coop fires that occur every single year. I'll start posting them. You'll see them on our Facebook page about the coop fires, and they normally start about the end of September in some of the colder climates, the 1st of October. So you'll see them, I guarantee you. And these are just folks that killed them with kindness. That's all I can say. All right, let's get over here to the phone lines. We've got Peter Brown that has called in today. Great topic, salmonella, and some different takes on salmonella. We're so glad to have Peter Brown, founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com, on with us. Let's give him a big chicken whisper. Welcome. Hey, Peter, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Andy, how are you doing?
I'm sweeter than snuff and half as dusty, and finer than frog hair split four ways today. And I'm in a good mood and having a good time. We've got good weather and had a great weekend. I hope you did too. And I'm excited about today's topic, salmonella. You can always learn more about it, and everybody has their different take on it, whether it's the CDC or the FDA or the USDA or Dr. McCray or you, the chicken doctor. So I always learn something new. We're talking about salmonella, and we posted some things recently in the last 30 days, I guess, with salmonella on our Facebook page. I always get a lot of comments about this, that, or the other, so I know it's something we agreed that needed to be presented again, so we're looking forward to all kinds of great information. So listeners, get out those Chicken Whisperer notebooks, those spiral notebooks with the big CW on the cover. Get that pen and paper ready to take some notes about salmonella, and just because you have what you think is a clean and sanitary coop and run in your backyard does not mean you don't have to be at least familiar with salmonella. I guarantee you that. So we're all ears and eyes and ready to learn from you, my friend. Thanks for coming on.
Sure. Well, it's always been my position on any disease problem or whatever. The more you know, the better off you are. And you know, no better way than to try to learn it, to do it the way we try to teach it here, straight up. Try not to get involved too much in the big words. Sometimes the big words are there, but you just have to think around them a little bit, because even I have to do that. I get tired of the big words sometimes when I want to read something. So sometimes I make believe the big words don't exist and try to get to the meat of the subject without falling all over the stuff. But
exactly.
Yeah, you know, life's too complicated enough without having to learn how to spell all the big words and everything else. And to constantly keep them straight in your noggin. The main thing, I think, you know, we talked about salmonella already quite a while ago, I believe, and I did present it at that time as a scenario. The question at that point in time was salmonella pylorum, which most people who either show or ship birds should be testing their birds for this. It's a National Poultry Improvement Program designed to eradicate Salmonella pylorum. And prior to, you know, to 1970 or so, there were other salmonellas. Salmonella pylorum and Salmonella gallinarium were the big shots on the block. And through this NPIP program, and eradication, we basically have, I won't say eliminated those, but gotten them under the control so far that they're not as big a deal. But if you'll remember, I've talked about this in the past too, I think it's worthy of bringing it up. When you have a dominant organism in an environment, it tends to be the one that gets all the attention. And when you take care of it and you keep it under control, then you have other ones that become dominant. And that's exactly, basically, from my standpoint, you know, where this has gone. So we've gone from Salmonella pylorum and Salmonella gallinarium being the big shots on the block to four or five others now that have become more prevalent in the environment. There is some thinking that some of these things have come about because of climate change. And that wouldn't surprise me. It probably doesn't take a whole lot of temperature uptick in some categories of bacteria, viruses, and stuff to change their environment to make them hardier, stronger, or easier to for them to live, that kind of thing. It would, none of that would surprise me. There's thoughts about that as far as the oceans are concerned, things that they're seeing in different types of fish now that they've never seen before, and so on and so forth. So this, none of this surprises me. The issue here is, you know, how do you deal with it? How do you control it? How do you keep yourself safe? How do you keep your family safe? How do you keep your flock safe? And this is a little bit of a bold statement, but, you know, quit buying all the crap that's out there. Every time you see a chicken that somebody's got, and you just have to have it, do your due diligence on it. I mean, if I hate to use those terms because, but it does get under my skin every time I see this, whether it be Facebook or other places, and, you know, if I had a nickel for every time that somebody has bought a bird, got it home, or on the way home it got sick, or it was sick when they picked it up, or whatever, you know, we wouldn't be having this conversation. I'd be off somewhere letting somebody else do something. But at any rate, you know, you want to know the source of the birds that you're getting these birds from. And this is not a knock on any particular individual, but I don't care who the breeder is. I don't care where they're located. I don't care what they say. And I certainly wouldn't buy from a person that I could only deal with online. Okay, I think that's just crazy. If the only place you can get a hold of them online is online, no phone, you know, that's crazy. You're just asking for trouble there, because if something goes wrong, guess what? Your emails aren't going to get answered. You're not going to get your money back, and you can flap all you want about the person on the internet, and it doesn't change a thing that you got a bunch of crappy birds that are sick. And so on. So I just urge everybody to use your common sense, use some biosecurity. I know this doesn't have anything maybe to do directly with today's subject, but, you know, I've said it on the show before, when you are out and about going someplace to someone else's premise and going to look at birds, do the drive-by. That's your first line of defense right there. And if that place doesn't look pristine or up to snuff and there's junk laying around and the coops have fallen down, just keep that car in drive, take your foot off the brake, and keep rolling, because you don't need the aggravation you're more than likely going to get from that place. Now, does that mean that there wouldn't be some place or there aren't places who have premises like that that raise, you know, tremendously healthy birds? Sure. You don't know that. And after you're there, many people feel obligated to buy. We've all done that. You know, sometimes we go in a store, take a lot of a salesman's time, and you're sitting on the fence. You don't know whether you want to buy something or not, and they've spent 20 minutes, half hour with you explaining this, explaining that, running for this, running for that. You end up buying something, you get it home only to bring it back a couple of days later, or even worse, put it over in a corner and never use it again. And I've done that myself. You know, you just feel obligated. So don't feel obligated. You know, if you stop and things are not up to snuff, don't bring this aggravation home to yourself, because it's only if the bird costs you $50 and you bring it home sick, it's going to cost you another $100 or $200 to fix it most of the time. And so I urge people to use their common sense, to use some biosecurity. I don't care if your best friend down the street and they've had birds for 40 years and they're coming over to your place, It's just a disaster, you know, looking for a place to happen, and it usually ends up happening on your doorstep, and it's not necessary, and you don't need the aggravation. So please, you know, be aware of what's going on, be aware of how things spread, you know, a little bit of oxygen goes a long, long way to keeping things under control, to disinfecting things. And, you know, if you want to use bleach, use bleach. I don't care. It's not my business what you use, but use something. And just for those who are big bleach fans, you know, the oxygen is only 200 times more powerful than the bleach. So you keep using the bleach, and that's fine. I'm not going to argue with you, just like I'm not going to argue over heat lamps or whatever else. I'm not going to argue over things that have been tried and true and have proven in the scientific community and, you know, in the practical end of the usage of it as well.
And I post in the chat room this too, because I've heard this so much. We talked about it just last Thursday when Dr. McRae was on talking about something, you know, and it's the and she had kind of the same thing you did. You know, you just, because I asked her, I said, how as a scientist do you deal with folks that when you're trying to talk about something, we'll just talk about salmonella or whatever. And you have someone says, well, I lick eggshells right out of a chicken's butt every day for 80 years, and I have never been sick, you know. Whether it's with salmonella, whether it's this, whether it's that, the other, whatever the case may be. And you have the, well, I've done this, or I've done this, and I've never been sick, or I've never had a sick bird, and I go on all these, you know, coop tours, and I go to farm after farm, and I've never had a sick bird. And, you know, her response to that was basically like, well, then obviously, you know, you're wasting your time talking with them. They don't want to learn anything new. They don't care about anything new. They're just, you know, stuck in their ways. Tomorrow, you know, she's like, tomorrow's another day. Just like you said on an episode, and I shared that with her on Thursday. You know, you may go out and jump in front of the bus every day for the last 10 years, but guess what? Tomorrow's your day.
If we want, I'll use myself as the guinea pig here. You know, if you would have told me, 6 months or a year prior to me having a heart attack, I was going to drop dead on the ground, deader than a doornail, I would have laughed at you and said, there's no family history, and there's no reason to have that kind of thing. I feel good, I feel healthy, and so I'm a perfect example, you know. I just, it's one that, you know, it gets your undivided attention. And then, you know, at the end of the day, you know, look, everybody makes a mistake. Nobody's perfect. Nobody knows anybody that's perfect. I know a lot of people that claim they are, but I don't know of anybody that's perfect. And I've always used this term. I've worn out my fair share of erasers, trust me. And
amen.
You know, made mistakes that I thought were, you know, that were the cat's meow in the beginning and turned out to be the biggest turtle you ever saw. But so everybody makes a mistake. The idea is to try to, as best you can, learn from it. So, you know, if you've been bitten by bad birds from somebody before, then you should be on a higher degree of alert when you're out buying birds. Because, you know, I see all of these things, you know, on the Internet and everywhere else. And, you know, I would be asking for questions or asking questions of certain people who are selling certain types of birds that are coming from countries that you're not supposed to be having eggs and or birds from there, you know. And everything may be legit, but the point is, I want to see it in writing. I want to see it in writing from a governmental agency where it says that this is all on the up and up and it's all up to snuff and everybody's happy and all the I's are dotted, T's are crossed, and the paperwork's all done, the fees paid, all that. I want to see it all. And if you don't have it, I'm walking. And it's that simple. You know, you're just so much better off to do this, because these diseases, this whole salmonella complex, what I call it, because it's not just one strain of salmonella. There are many. There are over 2,000 strains of salmonella, okay? Some affect humans, some affect animals, and some are somewhat rare in what they infect as well, because we don't see all of them, thank God for that. But at any rate, the salmonella... one of the reasons I brought this subject back up again was to bring it back to the forefront, to try to explain to people, you know, that it is out there. These things can be deadly. And I also wanted to bring up the fact that it's not just poultry. It is a fair amount of the time that it's poultry. But there are other things that are out there that... have infections with salmonella as well. I mean, none of this is new. We see it sometimes with more frequency, and I think we're going to see it less frequent now that the federal government has taken a stand on salmonella in poultry and eggs and so on. You know, they are on the hunt for it now more so than they were before. Before it was kind of a lackadaisical approach. Well, they are more on top of it now with inspectors inspecting farms and so on and so forth. And when they find a positive reading on the farm, everything comes to a halt, where before, you know, things were allowed to be shipped and everything else, and then they find out it is really the real deal, and then now they got a bigger problem than they had before. So now the way it's being done, from what I'm being told, is that if they find a positive reading on a farm or plant or whatever, the whole thing comes to a screeching halt. All the product is quarantined at that point in time. Nothing moves in or out until they get a positive reading on it and can track it down and find out where it is. So all of that will lead to safer food. In my opinion, we have the safest food in the world. I don't think there's any other country out there that has moves the volume of food that we move in this country, not only in the country and out of the country. We export a lot of food and have technically so few problems. The latest figures that I've seen claim that there are somewhere around 1.1 to 1.2 million cases of salmonella-related illnesses in the U.S. alone each year. And we're not the only country that has this problem. This is a worldwide problem. This isn't something that just cropped up in the United States' backyard. And on average, anywhere from 350, 400-plus people succumb to the disease every year. Just here in the United States. Worldwide, I'm sure it's much higher than that. But at any rate, there are five major players in the salmonella game, and this is not necessarily important to write them down, just to know that, and, you know, you'll hear them on the news and that kind of thing. Salmonella enteritidis. And for those who are interested in the spelling, it's enteritidis. And Salmonella typhimurium, that's typhimurium. And these are a little bit newer to me, the Salmonella Newport. I've heard of it before, but it wasn't a big deal. It's the third most common type of salmonella that's associated with foodborne type illnesses, and some of these will come from different areas. Not all of them always come from chickens. There's ground beef, pocket pets. We've seen it on peanut butter. There was a big outbreak in Georgia, which actually went to, I don't know how it all turned out at the end of that, and follow through all the way to the end. It was around 2009, 2010, somewhere in there, that was a big outbreak where they were selling peanut butter that they evidently knew was contaminated or was having problems within their plant and stuff. So that was a criminal deal besides just the fact that somebody had to pay the bills or medical bills and claims against you know, being sick. So it's not just live poultry, it's eggs, it's beef, it's everywhere and anywhere that contamination is allowed to occur. You'll not have salmonella unless you come in contact with it somewhere, and most of the time it's because somebody went to the bathroom and didn't wash their hands or something along those lines, or a flock was infected and nobody knew and nobody was doing the due diligence and that kind of thing. So it is something that is spread through the droppings very readily, okay? And that's how it gets outside the bird to start with. But also, while it's inside the bird, it can an egg-laying-type bird, you can have it certainly in the eggs and come right out in the eggs. And so that becomes a problem. But all of these have their own little idiosyncrasies, alfalfa sprouts. There was another one with cantaloupe. I made a little list because I can't keep all of this stuff in my head, and not that I want to. But, you know, it's also can be from contaminated water. In other words, it doesn't have to be spread by somebody who didn't wash their hands. It can be spread by water that's been contaminated. It can be contaminated in a number of ways. Free-flying birds that are carrying it, sewage that got out of control that had it in it, manure that wasn't handled right, a whole bunch of things. But there was an outbreak that came from Mexico and spread all across the United States, and that was from peppers that were infected with the salmonella from Mexico. came up and ended up in salsas and sauces and all over the place, and prepackaged stuff and so on. And that was a huge outbreak there as well. 2009, beef from California, and that was one of the times when they started seeing this Salmonella Newport, okay, which is a the third most leading Salmonella organism that is basically out there. Then you can remember, I think it was 2010, 2011, that big chicken farm of Jack DeCosta's out there in Galt, Iowa. That one I didn't have to write down. We all kind of remember that one. And yeah. That was about a half a billion eggs, I think, was for Galt.
Yeah, 500 million eggs, absolutely.
And that was a big mess. And really, if you go back to it, this is just what I've been saying. Nobody there was doing their due diligence. Free-flying birds coming in and out of the houses, rodents everywhere, and this is easily spread from rodent droppings. So, you know,
that's what I was going to say next. Rodent droppings, a lot of times, with the backyard flocks, the wild birds, people have bird feeders in their runs or next to their birdhouse, their chicken house, chicken coop. They think it's, the chickens can eat all the leftover seeds that the birds don't get, or they love scratching under the bird feeder along with all the wild bird poop that's there as well.
Yep.
And that's an issue that I think people need to be aware about with the wild bird feeders not being anywhere near your backyard chickens, but also the rat droppings. I mean, mice and rat droppings, and that's been confirmed on several cases of Salmonella. We've talked with Bridget before, absolutely.
Well, one of the other reasons that I brought up Salmonella again today was, chickens and eggs always take a hit. I mean, all the things I've been talking about, has anybody ever heard of these other things? Most of them, other than that peanut one, did you hear about the beef in California back in 2009? No. Did you hear? Did you hear about the papayas in Texas in 2011? No. You see, it's only
just like
I
said.
Yeah, go ahead.
After the egg incident spot, that biggest in history, 500 million. It was like, in 6 months, this won't be in the news any longer. People will forget. Egg sales will go back up. These companies, I don't want to put words in their mouth. I don't want to say they don't care. But they know as well as I do and you do that in 6 months, this will be all swept under the rug, business as usual, sales back up to where they were and even increased. And people don't even think about it when they're going to buy eggs anymore. It's just like all the other ones you talked about. Oh, maybe chili peppers from Taco Bell or this place or that place. You've talked about a lot of those, and now you don't even remember those, or even if you, I do remember that 3 years ago, but I hadn't stopped anything that I'm doing now, or where I buy food, or what food I buy, or anything like that. You just go and say, it won't happen to me, and they just forget about it. And the companies know. The peanut butter recall, I'm sure everybody here is buying that same brand peanut butter now, just not even thinking twice about it. Everything,
Well, we have a tendency to, at least in this country, from my perspective, a very short memories when it comes to a whole lot of things. And evidently this is one of them. You have a fair amount of people on one side of the fence that are moaning and groaning about this, that, and the other thing in the food chain. And, this here is right under your nose. This and E. coli. And just because you have backyard chickens does not excuse you from any of these problems. It can come along, at any time.
Someone in the chat room asked, you just don't hear a lot about Salmonella in backyard chickens. And in the chat room I put, how many backyard chicken keepers do you think test for Salmonella? I mean, 1%, 5%? I don't know many of any that say, I think I'll just check my chickens for Salmonella today.
I don't know of anybody that does it, actually,
No, I don't either. I've never done it either. So it's there. You just don't know about it because no one ever really tests for it. They think, it's clean, it's safe, everything's fine and dandy. Let me ask you this. Something while we have, because some people may have to head on later in the show. I want to get this out, this one question for you. Because, people say the MPIP, you always want to try to buy from an MPIP certified, tested hatchery or backyard breeder or whatever the case may be. And I think we all agree that, the more hoops that, say, a hatchery has to jump through, It may or may not be a little bit more peace of mind. You there may be that information where you're getting safer birds because you do that. But I want to know your view on this, because I often share with people who often just do NPIP and they put it on their little business card they bought. They have it at Home Depot, and they're have a little backyard hatchery and they're selling birds, and they think, my birds are safe because I have NPIP. And, you know, so my issue there is, don't get me wrong, I'm glad they're doing it. I think it's a good step. But at the same token, today the inspector comes out, they have a flock of 50 birds. They don't check all 50. They'll check a few. And then my understanding is that they're done for 365 days. So tomorrow, maybe the next day, now your birds are infected. And now you've got 363 days that you're selling birds that are now infected. You have no idea because you feel you're safe because you got a test 3 months ago or 6 months ago, and they didn't even test all your birds. So I'm not discounting it one bit. I get, you know, the more certifications, the more hoops they're jumping through, that they feel like they're doing what they can to provide you a good, healthy bird. But the folks that have that instant safe feeling that, oh, they're NPIP, I'm getting safe birds, bottom line, no problems, when they could be infected 3 days after the testing is done, and now for the rest of the year they've got infected birds. So, I mean, do you kind of, your view, I mean, obviously I guess that's correct information, but I mean, it's, what's your take on that? I want people to, you know, to know what you feel about that regarding that. Yes, I think it's a good thing, but yes, this could happen. You know, they're infected now 3 days after they get this test. Are people putting too much credence in that one test that they're testing for because they're not testing for all the other different types of salmonella that may be present?
Well, yeah, I think you are. I think you are putting way too much, faith, in that type of a situation, because, you can get infection can take place basically at any time. So, I mean, that's why when they do the AI testing here, I believe you have to have tests run every 90 days, and if you move birds in and out, it has to be redone. And that gives you a much better, opportunity to see where your flock is. But I will go out on a limb here, and I'm sure I'll saw it off while I'm out on the end. But I don't know whether it's annoyed or whatever. Maybe you can call it annoyed. I don't care what you call it.
Frustrated, maybe? Frustrated, not
yeah,
not so
because,
hard.
You know, I see people moan and groan about the cost of Pelorum antigen testing for their birds. And, years ago, most of the states, because it's a state requirement, they were supplying the antigen to a tester, and then a tester would go out and do that, and they were only allowed to charge for their time and not the antigen because it was being provided to them free. But to my knowledge now, I don't even know if any state now is providing it free. There may be a couple, but I know Ohio is not. I don't think they do it here at all as far as that's concerned. So it's inherently cheap. Without shipping and everything else, you're looking at about, depending on where you buy it. I don't sell it anymore. And I'll tell you, I'll give you a little quick story. I don't sell the antigen anymore because I always heard people when they called and said, first thing they want to know, what's the expiration date? Okay?
Uh-huh.
So if you buy in a dozen bottles of the stuff and you got about, maybe better than $1,200 invested in this thing, and everybody wants the longest expiration date they can get. So now what I've done, because you end up with it and you throw it away, you can't sell it. Once it gets down to an expiration date within 2, 3, 4 months of its expiration date, nobody wants it because they all want that longer expiration date. So then they hunt and pick from one guy to another. So now what I do is if you want to know where to get it, I will give you the manufacturer's name and you can buy it directly from them and you can deal with it. You can deal with all the shipping. You can deal with all the other stuff because I'm done playing with it. You know what I mean? It's just got to be such a pain in the neck. you know, and everybody running around trying to buy it a little bit cheaper somewhere else with a better date and everything up. So now go right to the manufacturer, buy what they have. And there's only one manufacturer, one. So that eliminates all the other stuff. So you don't have to run around and go all over the Internet and everything else. You can go right to the source and buy it. And I don't know what they charge because I don't care. But if you're paying $130 plus shipping for a bottle of this stuff, there's enough in the bottle to test 1,000 birds. 1,000 birds. So, I mean, how cheap do you want it? You see, and that therein lies the problem. Now you start getting into more your sophisticated tests. I would, personally myself, I would love for people to be able to afford, and this is on a different note, this has nothing to do with the plurum, it's a totally different thing, because this can get expensive, and I understand that. But this running what we call a baseline test on your flock. So you take a representative sample of your flock, and you get them tested for Mycoplasma galloceptica. If you want to get some testing done for plurum, regular salmonella rather than the plurum, salmonella plurum, go ahead and do that. Maybe you want to do some Newcastle, maybe you want to do some bronchitis. Gives you a baseline of what's in the flock, you know, and then they can tell you what the levels are. In other words, you know, was it an outbreak at one time, or was it just been exposed somewhere and you know, the immune system fought it off, but they're still showing positive, still showing some antibody levels, which means that they have at least seen that particular disease antigen. So you know what the heck you're dealing with, you know. But it can get expensive. And I understand the pain of that one, you know, and I'm not saying everybody should run out and do that, but what I am saying is that, you know, that would be the ideal thing, and you wouldn't have a lot of these problems cropping up in the backyard that people wouldn't know what to do or anything else. And even when people get them, they ignore it. I had a flock here recently that had an outbreak of laryngotracheitis, which we call LT, last year. There was a minor outbreak, didn't seem to be a whole lot of mortality. There was some, you know, morbidity, birds standing around, sneezing, coughing, choking, all that kind of stuff. The flock eventually recovered, a little bit of mortality. And so it leads me to believe that it was probably a vaccine strain that caused it rather than a field outbreak. Field outbreak usually get a lot higher mortality and morbidity and so on. This year, the same flock had the same problem. And They kept saying, well, they look like the mycoplasma positive. I said, yes, but you have a flock history, you know, of laryngotracheitis. That's one of the nastiest viruses that chickens can get. And, you know, we went back and forth, a zillion emails and everything else. And, you know, to my knowledge, to this day, they still haven't done a thing about it. You know, flocks recovered, everybody fat, I'm unhappy, and, you know, they go on. So sometimes, you know, you get what you get. And if you don't pay attention, you know, the bus will run you over. And,
yeah.
You know, again, I've seen this happen, people bringing in birds from people who have vaccinated with the hot strain of the LT vaccine, and then you end up with it in your flock, and it just nickel-dimes you to death and causes havoc and a whole lot more expense. So people need to ask the questions, you know, if you're buying from somebody, what are they vaccinated for? And hopefully they'll tell you the truth. But at any rate, I would love to see people, vaccinate, or not necessarily vaccinate, but do some blood testing to find out, you know, where they are with their flocks. And in true answer to your question, I wouldn't hang my hat on the NPIP thing at all, unless you were full-blown in their program of the MG, the whole bit, the AI, then you might have something. But as far as just being NPIP negative, it's a nice thing. It's a nice thing to have. It's one more piece of the pie, one more piece of the puzzle. You know, and there's no reason why a person couldn't come back. That's the cheapest one, and you can go get certified yourself to do it. They may not allow you to certify your own flock, but it doesn't matter. You will at least know what's in there, and the test is simple.
Yeah.
It's a simple test. It takes just 2 or 3 minutes to run the test on each bird. You don't have to do them all in the same day. You know, it's no big deal. You know, if they were mine and I were looking to hang my hat on something, that's the way I would do it. Or I would hook up with somebody that is a plurum tester and say, look, I want you to come by every 3 months. Can you cut me a better deal? Maybe you can, maybe you can't. You know, or what if I buy the antigen? You just pay me. I pay you for your time. What do you think about that? You know, and just let them come by and test every one of them. Test everyone. It's not that big a deal. But so no, I don't know. I don't know what the conversation was. I don't know what Bridget had to say about it. But you know, something is better than nothing. But I wouldn't. You know, if somebody said to me, I'm NPIP negative for Pleroma, so that's nice. You know, what else you got going on in your flock? And if you don't, and if they don't, well, they'll tell you nothing because many people don't recognize it, see? They just don't recognize it. And you know, therein lies another problem, you know. And,
like when, and she'll say this, and I've heard you say this, I've heard her say it as well, that when you hear somebody say, what are you talking about? All my birds are healthy. Mm-hmm. And she'll reply, really? When was the last time you had them tested for anything? You know, or like you sometimes say, hey, withhold the feed and water from them for 24, 36 hours, and that sometimes will trigger an underlying issue, illness, disease that you don't know that's there.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. But getting back to this salmonella thing, the fourth most common salmonella that's usually reported to the CDC and stuff is Salmonella javiana, spelled J-A-V-I-A-N-A. And I think it's interesting to note that it's, while all of these don't always come from chickens, they can, but the more host-adapted they are, meaning the more they are acclimated to a particular host, the easier it is for them to infect that host, whether it be human, chicken, or anything else. So I thought this one was an interesting one when I read about it, because this one predominantly, not always, predominantly, is in the southeast of the U.S., okay, and comes predominantly, but not always, from amphibians. So I thought it was kind of interesting. And so, you know, these things get spread around, and this has been linked to problems in the U.S. over the years of contaminated mozzarella cheese, watermelon, fish, poultry, lettuce, tomatoes. So it's but it's not as common as the others, but it is still out there. And the last one, but not least, is what we call Salmonella Heidelberg. That's H-E-I-D-E-L-B-E-R-G, fifth most common type. This one can be found in eggs as well, and they're starting to find it in poultry. It has not been as big a deal over the years, but it is up and coming. There was a recent outbreak of this in some shell eggs and some chicken meat. So you're not hearing some of them because they're small. They're caught early because people are testing for it now. There is a vaccination available. I haven't seen any data to show yet whether or not the vaccines are really that effective. Because, see, if the vaccine can't stop the bird from shedding the salmonella bacteria either into the carcass of the bird or through the egg, then it is of no value, because we don't really see any with these particular ones, these five that I've been talking about, not Salmonella pylorum, but these five, we really don't see any mortality in birds. We just they're like carriers, and they just pass it on. And I thought it was interesting that, like I said, a lot of this stuff is not just here. It is here, there, and everywhere. For instance, I think it was in Denmark, someplace over there in the Scandinavian countries. I may have the country wrong, but I read some of this stuff a long time ago. But they estimate 1 in 5 people is a carrier of salmonella. I think that's quite interesting. And see, there and again, that's how this stuff can get spread around. Sanitation, poor sanitation when handling food. God, I've had a nickel for every time I go to a restaurant these days and see the clerk or somebody. Doesn't matter where on their hand they're wiping their nose, but I don't want them handling my food after they've wiped their nose with their hand, whether it was the back of their hand or their elbow. It makes no difference to me. But you see more and more of that, and nobody takes them to task for it because it's just the way it is. I remember, when I was a kid growing up, they had to wear hair nets and everything else. Now it doesn't matter. You know, if you find a piece of hair in your food, it might be more common now than it ever was. But, you know, these
hey,
things...
Peter, I've had a,
Yeah.
As I say, I've got to take a run to commercial break. It's about 1 o'clock, a little after 1. But I do have a question in the chat room about what your opinion is with false positives. And we can address that when we come back, and I'll review the chat room to see if there happens to be any other questions for you as well on the topic. But they did have one about false positives and your experience with that, how common or not common that may be. Folks, you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Our guest today being Monday is Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. And today's topic is salmonella. A lot more information to come, so stay tuned. We'll return right after this short break from our sponsors. Stay with us, everybody. More to come with Peter Brown.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
Do you provide a heat source for your backyard chickens in the winter? In most cases, it's not necessary. But if you choose to provide a heat source for your backyard chickens, it's imperative to use a safe and effective heat source, and the only one I recommend is the Sweeter Heater. The Sweeter Heater is a safe, completely sealed, washable, non-breakable, energy-efficient, long-lasting, and reliable specific area heater that comes with a 3-year warranty. Ditch the dangerous heat lamp this season and invest in the only heater I recommend, the Sweeter Heater. Purchase the Sweeter Heater online at sweeterheater.com. That's sweeterheater.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America. But picture a chicken wearing an apron, and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster, and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
This looks like a job for Super Chicken. You get the super sauce, I'll don my super suit.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on this Monday episode. Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Today's guest being Monday, as always, Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. Visit him online, firststatevetsupply.com. If they don't have it, you don't need it. So lots of great stuff, including their all-new emergency medical kit. Not a first aid kit, but emergency medical kit with a small... and kind of not individual doses, but smaller bottles of medicine for your chickens. How often do we hear on the show when Peter's on, Dr. McCray's on, and we talk about when you're talking with someone who's got sick chickens and you say, well, I think we need to start this treatment plan. What do you have? 9 times out of 10, the answer is nothing. So this is something that he's made, he's developed. It's very cost effective, so you don't have to buy 9 bottles of tons and tons of stuff. It just has an expiration date on it, like he was talking about. But an emergency medicine kit that you can have on hand that doesn't break the bank. So you have all these huge bottles of the same stuff that's in this emergency medicine kit with an expiration date. So if or when you have an issue, a health issue with your chickens, you can start treating immediately and then reorder as you need it. So it's saving you money, folks, and it could save the life of your chickens instead of having to say, uh-oh, something's wrong. What do you have? I have nothing. And then you call Peter, and he's got to ship things out to you, and that's just 2 or 3 days of delay when you could be treating your chickens with the right information. So thank you very much for staying today. Our topic today is salmonella, and a question in the chat room for you, Peter, is about false positives regarding the phlorum testing, false positives that you hear it happens often. What if you have it? Will they retest and try again? Can you request a retest if there's a positive thinking? Well, what if this is a false positive? What's your experience with that?
Well, a false positive can be caused by a number of things. Birds that have been vaccinated with some of the inactivated or killed vaccines readily can throw a false positive into the mix. The fact that the antigen may be out of date, may not have been handled properly. I don't know. I haven't seen how, and only some of the people that have this done would know. You know, the antigen is supposed to be refrigerated, so if they're not bringing it to you in a cooler and keeping it relatively cool during the process, you know, that could add to it as well. Bacterial contamination could lead to the same thing. It's possible that another type of salmonella may be there causing that false positive. It may not be salmonella pylorum. Maybe it's one of the others. I'm not sure how they wouldn't be. In other words, you wouldn't use that pylorum antigen for the Salmonella enteritidis, the Typhimurium, the Javiana, or the Copenhagens, or any of those, but there may be something in it as that will react with it and give a false positive. So retesting usually is what's done, and I don't know if they're going to retest the bird and it tests, positive again, my guess is that they're going to quarantine your farm. I mean, they're going to do something. They're either going to put the bird down, but that doesn't, if the bird was positive, that does not mitigate the problem because now the premises is contaminated. It's a fecal dropping problem as well. Very readily shed through the dropping. It's called fecal shedding. A lot of viruses and bacteria do that. They come out in the droppings and become readily available to the next person coming along, the next chicken coming along, or the next person coming along, touching it and becoming infected with it. So I can't see them not wanting to do more than just let it go. So retesting certainly is generally the way it has always gone in the past. It might vary state to state, but I can't see that because it's a federal program, really.
Okay, another question in the chat room. I've never thought about this either, but you see it at petting zoos just this weekend when we went with Caleb and things like that. USDA, Biosecurity for Birds, and APHIS kind of recommends it, but Christmas Chick wants to know, would hand sanitizer, you know, the typical Purell or the other brands of hand sanitizer all over hospitals and other, would that kill the salmonella? She says she has some for her visitors, but they have never used it. So I'm just curious about that, if you knew anything.
I would encourage it. I can't speak directly to it because I've not seen any data that tells me that they do. But anytime I've ever been to any of those places, I certainly you know, I certainly do when I go to the fair. It's not, you know, it really isn't just because of the salmonella. There's so many things out there these days. What was it here? I don't have a recent case in my head, but I know we talked about it last year when we talked about, you know, the avian influenza thing and going to the fair and picking up swine flu.
From being
a swine barn and handling them or touching them or whatever. So something's better than nothing. My guess is it probably would. Most of them are a particular type of alcohol base to them. I used to carry one years and years ago. I can't remember the name of it now, but he had spent loads and loads of money getting an FDA approval on it for its kill time on salmonella and so on. And his was an alcohol-based type product as well. And I don't even know if he sells it today. I can't remember the name of it. But, I would slather it on. The more the merrier. And I wouldn't wipe my hands then on a towel. I would continue to wring my hands together till it became dry. The longer the contact with the killing agent in the hand sanitizer, the better off you're going to be. So my opinion, it's just an opinion of mine, but I would say yes. I can't see why not.
Yep. And Chickie said that she's got her clogs that she wears. They're soaking in oxine, so she doesn't bring anything home to her girls. Yep, absolutely. And I know you've been recommending oxine for years and years and years, whether it be cleaning the coops or biosecurity or even nasal flushes with the chickens and things like that. The thing is well worth to have a gallon of that around the homestead, that is for sure.
Yeah, I have severe sleep apnea, not caused by weight gain, but just the shape of the back of my throat can't be changed. And so I sleep with a full-face CPAP pump. And, you know, the mask and the hose and the water container have to be, you know, generally on a daily basis disinfected. So we use oxine here, just take it apart, throw in a little tub of oxine water and let it soak for a couple of hours and come back, rinse it all off, dry it, and put it all back together. We do it as a matter of routine. The chickens here get it in their water. As a matter of fact, we're just starting them here now on the oil of oregano. We're just so happy with that stuff, it isn't funny. And been a tremendous product. And you know, that may, I won't go out on a limb and say that this will take care of salmonella, but I know that it'll take care of E. coli, and salmonella and E. coli are fairly close together. Okay, they're very, very close together as far as bacteria go. So I can't see why it wouldn't. But my turkey farmer's still going.
No,
he hadn't had to do a thing other than just mix it up and put it in the water. And he's come up with a method where he's got a 1,000-gallon plastic tank. He went and bought a brand new one just to use for the turkeys. And we mixed it up. I think we put 40 ounces of the oil of oregano concentrate into 1,000 gallons of water. And he's rocking and rolling with it. He'll be harvesting birds here before long. So
that's cool. Were you going to get into, because I know even though the show goes on for the next 45 minutes, I didn't know if you were going to touch on specifically maybe for the backyard flock folks or anybody for that matter, homesteader, the signs and symptoms, salmonella, if we suspect we see those, getting a test on and then treating for that, if there's a way to treat, cure, what have you, and a plan of action.
Yep.
Well, it's okay, good. I just want to make sure we're watching the clock, but so far so good.
Yeah. Keep in mind that this is a, for the most part, going to be a fecal problem. So therein, you know, that's your first line of defense when you start seeing birds. Generally, you're going to see birds with salmonella, and it can go either way here. So but from a standpoint of when I see either way, it's going to either be E. coli or salmonella because they both cause a white dropping, okay? That in many cases sticky, sticks to the feathers, and that kind of thing, and it's constant.
How do we differentiate between, say, you describe it a white dropping versus urites that have sometimes a white cap on the dropping itself?
Okay, well,
we don't scare everybody when they have urites, and then we say, "Oh my gosh, I've got salmonella."
And that's a good question, and I'll clarify that. When a bird has a normal dropping, which is what a normal dropping technically can be any color, but it's a dropping that is well formed and contains a white cap. Mm-hmm. And that white cap is the urates that you're talking about, and it is part of the urine of the bird's dropping. And if the birds have basically a two-part dropping. When you start seeing Salmonella and E. coli, you start seeing the white being a preponderance of the dropping. You start seeing it sticking to the feathers and that kind of thing. You might not see any real debilitation in the bird, meaning that the bird does not appear sick. It just can't have a decent dropping, okay? So, you know, there's not going to be coughing, sneezing, snotty noses, and swollen faces, and all that kind of stuff. They're just going to have
this. A good thing that I've always remembered talking was that a lot of times, and Dr. McRae will talk about this, about different types of gut diseases and things that, and this is layman's terms for me and every, so maybe the other our listeners, but that let's say you do have that, whatever you have in the gut, that a lot of times that disease, that organism, that bacteria will kind of, if you will, make an agreement with the gut. Say, look, you let me live here and hang out and do my thing, I won't bother you. You live on and do your thing, and I'll do my thing, and it's there, and it could rear its ugly head at any day, and it's all it can be there, like you're saying, with the three, really, your birds are healthy? When's the last time you had them tested for anything? And so, like you're just saying with the Salmonella, you may not see any effects of your bird as far as down health or just being puny in general versus, the white droppings. I like that terminology. I've heard for years that sometimes your gut and whatever it is in there that shouldn't be there, disease or bacteria, get a relationship going to where they kind of deal with each other, but it never ends up being, a necessarily quote-unquote problem with your chickens, or you see the effects of it, even though it's there. Yep.
Cool. Yeah, a lot of the time when baby chicks are born and they got pasty butt, it can be either Salmonella or it can be E. coli, as a general rule. Either one of the two, usually. In many cases, it used to be caused by Salmonella typhimurium, and that still may be the truth. There was a big problem with some hatchery chicks here a year or so ago coming out of New Mexico, I believe. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's the point. It's so hard to get once this thing, this is like Pandora's box. Once you open it, you can't get the lid on quick enough. Birds are sent everywhere and anywhere, every backyard across America, so to speak. So, when they come out of there and they're not healthy and they end up on your doorstep, and you don't realize it, that's why when I did this first show on Salmonella, I talked about it as a scenario that you might run into when you're raising birds and you got them out of the incubator and there's a crappy hatch and they straggled around and this and that. And anyway, you took them out and you put them in the brooder and, they start dying and you can't, you're medicating and they're getting a little bit better, but they're still not better. And then, you go through this whole scenario of things and then you have some that recover and are okay and the mortality stopped. And now they're starting to look pretty decent. They're a little behind and everything else, but they're all carriers. That's why this is a disease, test positive and die. It's as simple as that. It's cruel on one hand, but it's even crueler on the other hand. That's why they have it set up the way it is, because it's not something that is easily cured. That's why avian influenza is a test positive and die type of a disease as well, because of the same thing. You can't control it. And it's even worse because it's a virus. Vaccination against it takes a particular vaccine for a particular strain, so by the time that's made, they're all dead anyway. And the next best thing is to stop the outbreak by testing and looking and watching and doing the things that they do. I mean, I think it's a tremendous thing, if you think about it, to take a disease like Salmonella pallorum and basically have it backed into a box. The lid has been put back on Pandora's box. Got a little crack in it yet, but it's pretty much been put down tight. And I say a little crack in it because there's still some around here and there. And several years ago, I was talking to a couple of people from the Department of Agriculture in North Carolina, and they were telling me that, because I asked them the question, you know, I said, you know, you guys are out here, you know, on the front lines of this stuff every day, so, you know, why are we still messing with this thing, you know? He said that find it a lot in your game birds, okay? And he's not talking about fighting chickens. He was talking about, you know, quail and pheasant and that kind of stuff. So it's still out there, and nobody wants it in their backyard, so to speak. And you run this risk with your birds when you're free-range birds, because you don't know who they're seeing. You don't know who they're rubbing elbows with. You don't know what they're eating, whose crop they found, and so on. So, you know, not only after you hatch all these birds out, all of what we call the offal, the waste, the membranes, the pieces of the shell itself, and any leftover albumin that didn't get absorbed, or dead chicks and everything, all highly contagious for salmonella then, they say. So now you take it and you throw it out back, and then, you know, the free-flying birds come in or whatever, you know, and there it goes, and it goes down the road. Or you put it out for the trash man, and it's all over the outside of the bag, and he doesn't have gloves on today, and he throws it in the back of the truck, and he's got an itch around his eye, he rubs around his eye and his nose and everything else. First thing you know, he's sick. So that's one of the reasons why. And that's the reason why I presented it that way the last time, because you go out and you look at it and you say, oh, you know, look like they might have coccidiosis. So you get out your cord and you treat them, or you get out your Amprol and you treat them, and they really don't get any better and they're still dying and everything else. Meanwhile, you got a full-blown case of Salmonella pylorum going on. You don't know it, okay?
Yep.
But it's still going on, and you're trying to fix it, like most of us would do. So it is a problem. From that standpoint, and that's why, you know, that's why they do it the way they do it, and it has to be done, because even the remaining birds from an outbreak are now going to be carriers. So that every time here's another scenario. You have these birds now that you went through this outbreak. You don't know what it was. You put some medication on them. They got better, which would happen, okay? And somebody wants to buy them. Now you sell them to this person. Well, he wants to use a couple of them as breeders. Well, they're all carriers. He doesn't know it. You don't know it. Now he goes over there, and now first thing you know, he's got a problem. You see, and it goes on and on and on, just snowballs from there. So it's a much better situation to have it under control, like we at least do at this point. And I think you're going to start seeing more of that with the on the human side with the Salmonella enteritidis and a few of the others. I don't think that the government is going to be sitting around on their fingers a whole lot longer watching this stuff. There, I know there's active testing going on all the time. I've talked to a few different people about it. Even in the tight budget constraints, they're still doing due diligence, watching for it. When they find it, shutting places down. You're not going to hear about everyone. You'll hear about it when it's a big deal. That's when you're going to hear about it. And they seem to want to beat up on the commercial poultry industry all the time, but this can happen anywhere. And if you think you're safe in your backyard, you're not. Okay, and you know, the more you have a closed flock, the better off you are. Let's give you, for instance, here with the chickens that we have here. I have a very large squirrel population here that is just a pain in the backside. They're fun to watch, and all the other stuff. Well, Tammy's got it set up so that she's put out feeders out front for them, so they stay out front, and the chickens are out back. You try to do things to try to mitigate your problems. I don't want them in there bringing whatever they've got in and out of the feeders and everything else. We put a bird bath out front. They want to go take a bath. They want to take a drink out of the bird bath. Let them go ahead. And it makes so much more sense. It's not all that much more expensive. Certainly not as expensive as some outbreak of something that they might bring with them, whether it be Giardia or some other thing that they're carrying at the same time. So, you know, if you just sit back, and I watch it all the time on Facebook, I'll tell you, it the people that don't understand that you've got predators in your area and you're not doing your due diligence, they are going to get into your chicken coop. They'll get in where you think, when you look at your coop, say, nah, they'll never get in that space. That's where they're going to get in. Trust me. That's where they're going to come in. And if you don't
think
so, you
just... Prairie Lover in the chat room wanted you to repeat the water-oxygen ratio for egg washing.
It's basically about 6 drops of oxine per quart of water. It's not very much. And, okay. I'll go into that again. That was one of the other reasons, and I'll get off of my horse there on that other subject. I want to move on here because I want to cover some of this stuff before we have to get off the air. But incubation time, and here's another problem. This is one of the short and long incubation periods, 1 day to 3 weeks. And that can depend on the virulence. The more virulent or stronger, so to speak, the salmonella strain you have, the quicker it may show up. Okay? So this thing can, you know, linger around and be a real pain in the neck for quite some time. Chicks that are hatched from these birds, you'll start seeing the peak mortality right around 3 to 4 weeks, right when you've got some money in them. Okay? And it's always that way. Symptoms that you might see in some of these birds, they get listless. This is with the Salmonella pallorum, pale combs. Again, this white diarrhea we were talking about, okay? They will act depressed. And there again, that depression can look like coccidiosis. But the tip-off here would be the white diarrhea. You're not going to see that with coccidiosis, okay? Morbidity usually is very high due to the high degree of birds that actually have the disease, and they just hang around and look sick and look miserable because they are. Okay, they're very, very sick at the time. Now this test, you don't necessarily need to be certified to do the testing. To my knowledge, anybody can buy it. I've sent several people in the last few months to this company to buy it, the antigen. It's what we call a whole blood test, so it's not like the test of mycoplasma where you have to separate the blood. You have to use the serum of the blood instead of the whole blood, so it takes a while to do that particular test because you have to draw the blood, you have to let it sit for a while, you have to let it separate, and then you have to use some of the serum with the antigen, and then it takes 2 or 3 minutes to read the test. So it's a little bit more complex, not hard, but a little bit more complex to do that particular test. Whereas the pallorum test, it's the blood as it comes out of the bird. 1 drop of blood, 1 drop of antigen on a piece of plate glass lit from behind. You mix it around with a clean toothpick or whatever. Once you've got it mixed and you rotate the plate around for a minute or so, it's got directions that come with it. It's real, real straightforward, simple to do. And then you read it after a couple of minutes, and if it looks like it's full of sand, it's positive. If it looks like 2 liquids mixed together, it's negative. It's real simple, easy to do, inexpensive for the most part, and you really don't need to be certified to do it. You just know how to read the test. And once you've seen it, you know, you don't have to go spend half a day or a day in school somewhere to do it. But if you want to do that, all you really need to do is contact your state extension agent. I'm sure they can set you up with it. Again, the more you know, the better off you are. Keep all of these things off your doorstep. Your pocketbook won't be so light. So that's called a rapid plate agglutination test, and that's because it only takes a couple of minutes to do it, and technically anybody can do it. It's really simple. It's not rocket science. Baby chicks, sometimes right when they're born, and a couple of things here, when they're born, they start that constant chirping, chirp, 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 and they never shut up. That can also be caused by dehydration, so you've got to watch what's going on there. You want to look for the pasty butt. You want to look for the white and the droppings, that kind of thing. The pasted vent again, and the white droppings could be E. coli as well. So you need to do that. And a lot of this stuff either comes from infected breeding stock or it comes from dirty eggs. I know there are some people out there that want to hatch and sell every chick they can, and all the birds don't lay in a nest box, so they go out there in the morning and they got a bunch of mud balls rolling around in the manure. They pick them up, they wash them off. Some do, some don't. Put them in incubate them, and off you go. So therein lies, another problem. Earlier we said this was fecal transmitted, basically. Okay, we're talking about from the bird. Right. Okay. After that, it can be through the egg, through the meat, and what have you. We all know that. This pallorum disease, and we're strictly talking about pallorum here, in severe cases, they can have edema under the skin, and so you'll get a weeping skin from some of the birds. Something that's a little bit more common and not to be confused with Mycoplasma synoviae or possibly foul cholera, would be swelling of the wing joints and swelling of the hock joints. Okay, Mycoplasma synoviae, which is a cousin to Mycoplasma gallisepticum, can cause swelling in the synovial tissues of the joints and cause these kinds of problems as well. Again, surviving birds are carriers, and one of the other things that you'll see with birds that are infected, and again, I keep clarifying it because I don't want people to hone in on just one thing because that's not good either, but either E. coli, Salmonella, they start acting like they're chilled when it's really not, okay, when they've got proper brooded temperature and everything else, and they've got plenty of food and plenty of water and that kind of thing. And so you start seeing birds that act chilled. You know you got a problem. You need to start looking at it, and it's especially when you got those ones that are constantly chirping and won't stay quiet. There can be increased thirst as well with this particular disease. So you want to you want to look at those things. So those are going to be your symptoms. Again, all of this can be prevented by some good sanitation. I highly recommend oxine because of the way it works, okay? It works by changing the pH, so therefore it never becomes resistant to any organism. It's always up for the task, has a lot of good history behind it, has got a lot of good research behind it. It is legal to use it in the bird's drinking water. It is legal to put it in a sprayer and spray it over top of the birds. To me, it's your first line of defense in an outbreak of any kind of disease because you can close up the coop, you can put it on a table inside, you can get yourself a nice fine particle sprayer, turn it on, let the place get foggy so you can just about see a bird, shut it off for about, and leave it like that for about 15, 20 minutes, open it up, and that's all legal. That's all on the label how to do it. Of course, our directions are going to give it to you and how many ounces of whatever rather than parts per million, parts per billion, and that kind of stuff. So we go that extra mile, have all that worked out for you, and so on. So we're high on the oxine for a whole lot of reasons, okay? And it's not just about selling the stuff. It's a lot more than that. One of the other things I wanted is new research around, I say new, it's been out now for probably a couple of years, but there's even newer information now to show. So you think that washing your eggs is such a hot deal, so you wash all your eggs and you put them away and everything else, and in some cases you actually can open yourself up to Salmonella getting through your eggshell. There's quite a few different studies around. This was an Australian study done with specific strains of Salmonella that are native to that particular country. They did some research to show that the more stressed the shell was, basically, is what they were saying. If the cuticle in other words, if you're sanding off most of the cuticle on this eggshell, and it comes in contact with Salmonella, it's probably going to make its way inside of the egg. Now, this. These Salmonella organisms are tricky. They're very good magicians. Most people might not know this, but the albumin of the egg for viruses and for bacteria in general is a very hostile environment. And it is that way to ensure, basically, that an embryo will develop unharmed. Now, they're... are obvious cases, and does happen, more often than we'd like, that, the eggs become contaminated with an overwhelming amount of bacteria, and you have the exploding eggs and so on and so forth. We all know that, but Salmonella is dependent upon several different amino acids in order to penetrate the cell of the host, meaning the chicken. So what it does, once it gets down in there, it has a methodology where that it uses to line up the proper amino acids that it needs in the proper order so that it can use them to penetrate the cell of the bird and become an infect that egg. So it's unique And this is somewhat emerging evidence that this type of stuff happens. So it has, remember, every time I talk about all these things, I always say to you that every organism wants to live.
Yep.
And every time you try to knock it down, human or otherwise, there is a workaround somewhere. Some things might take longer than others. Some things can take hundreds of years for an organism to make a comeback. But they eventually make their comeback. Okay? And this is just one more instance of that. It gets inside the egg. It's a hostile environment. It looks for a way around it. It has figured out for itself that it needs these particular amino acids, and I believe there's some other enzyme that's involved as well. It doesn't really matter. It's a very complicated process, but it actually is able to line them up in the order that they have to be, and that is huge in this hostile environment that it shouldn't be able to set up anything in, but it still does. So the thing to take away from this is the stronger your shell is, the more intact your shell is, the cleaner the place is that your bird has to lay their eggs, a nice clean nest box versus a dirty old floor, the less likely you are to have any organism enter that shell. I'm not against egg washing. I just don't think you should be scrubbing them. To me, if an egg is loaded with a bunch of manure, it goes in the bucket and goes out the door. It isn't worth saving, in my opinion. The ramifications of doing such, to me, just not worth it at the end of the day. It's just not something that I would want to do. And I don't think, I'm not one to take a whole lot of chances along those particular lines. So I think it's a better idea to discard that egg. And I see it all the time online, somebody trying to make that extra dozen eggs that got sold and everything else, and the birds aren't laying well and everything else. And that's where all of these things start, the need to have something that is, in your world, in short supply, and to try to, to get the job done, but at what expense. So be aware of the fact that the salmonella, under certain conditions, the test that I saw, I believe it was between 68, 70 degrees up to about 98, 99 degrees. Salmonella was able to live very well on the eggshell for 3 weeks all by itself. So waiting for that opportunity to a crack in the shell, crack is even worse. I mean, a cracked egg, that's one of the reasons why in this country cracked eggs are not saleable eggs. And they have been in Europe. I don't know if they've changed the rules over there, but cracks are always available over there. And they may have changed. I don't follow all the rules and regulations of every place, but I know over here, cracked eggs generally cannot be sold for human consumption, at least. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons there is, I mean, you have the environment of the egg, basically, other than the hostility part of the albumin of the egg. It's loaded with protein, carbohydrates, fat. The whole bit, and vitamins and so on. But it is an interesting thing, and I thought that this was all worth bringing out, bringing it back to the forefront again, going back over it. Biosecurity in this stuff is going to be your key, knowing where your sources of either your eggs come from or knowing the source where your birds come from, and being happy with that. If you're happy with it, I'm not here to change your mind on any of that. I mean, if everything's going along fine, or if you keep a closed flock and that kind of thing, great. But every time you bring in something from the outside, you expose yourself big time. And if you really have to have it, that's one thing. But if you don't have to have it, I would steer away from it. All you need to do is go to some of the boards and see all the problems that people have encountered by bringing in stock from somebody else, and they thought it was a good deal, and so on and so forth. So. That's about it, yeah. I think, for me.
That's just amazing information. And like I said, I don't say we beat salmonella like a dead horse, but, it is something that we try to cover on the show quite frequently because, you always hear things about it in the news, and everybody kind of has their take on it, but it's all kind of weeds back in and relates to each other. So, important topic, and like I said in on the Facebook post today, just because you have a small backyard flock and you think, I'll keep it spotless and clean, does not mean for a second You need to ignore this, and that is for sure. And like you said, you know, well, I've licked 50 raw eggs out of the chicken's butt 15 times, and I've never been sick. Well, tomorrow you run in front of the bus, and you're not, you know, tomorrow's your day. So, but no, I appreciate you emphasizing that as well, and the great information and your twist to it, and all the technical information, which is super, and keeping it simple for us, so we can understand it more and implement things and know how to recognize it and treat it and the whole nine yards. So I know we've been wanting to do this topic for a long time, and so I'm glad we did today. If you missed last week with Peter Brown, we had a great episode on
what, droppings?
Droppings, on yeah, loose droppings and causes and cures and things like that. So that also is very important. And you can listen to all of Peter's segments. All are archived at blogtalkradio.com. And if you're looking for a particular topic, say in Google, you can type in, you know, anything, salmonella, chicken whisperer. You can type in, and then normally you'll go right to that segment on Blog Talk Radio where that topic was discussed. Or you can put Peter Brown in Blog Talk Radio, and it'll come up, and you can see the, a lot of segments from Peter, because we try to keep those updated with being current, so you can listen to those 24/7. So, Peter, thank you very much for coming on, and as always, every Monday, folks, you can listen to Peter, and we look forward to seeing you here next week.
My pleasure.
All righty, thank you very much. That's going to wrap up another awesome show with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. Visit him online, folks. FirstStateVetSupply.com. That's www.firststatevetsupply.com. Super duper information every single Monday here on Blog Talk Radio with Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We thank you very much for tuning in while you're listening live today. The chat room was quite active and full, and we appreciate you chat room chickeneers coming in today, and also everybody that's going to listen to the archive, because this is a hot topic. And if you want to know, learn more about salmonella, of course, there's always the USDA. There's the CDC, there's the FDA, and you can go back and listen to all of our, resident experts. I know that poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McRae has done some shows with us on a salmonella, very fascinating as well. So thank you very much for tuning in, and we'll see you here tomorrow, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio. God bless everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Oh.